Okay, I think we can go ahead and start with the first presentation. The first speaker is going to be Therese MacBeth, and she will be talking about the effect of soil water on crop use and fertilizer, topsoil and subsoil phosphorus.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming along. So just a bit of background about where this work started. We were funded following a decadal drought to work on nutrition management under drought conditions. And as you can see in the bottom right-hand corner, as soon as we were funded to work on drought, it was raining. So this is the roadway leading to our field site last year. And so last year was the final year of our project, and so that really motivated us to do our work under rainout shelters, which is what you see in this paddock down here. So we were funded to think about nutrient management and its interaction with soil water. And so we thought about the system and the different components, which to us was the use of phosphorus that came from the fertiliser that we applied, the phosphorus from the topsoil and that from the subsoil. And so we developed a few hypotheses around where phosphorus supply might come from under wet and dry seasonal conditions. So phosphorus supply from fertiliser, our expectation was that the amount of fertiliser that was used in the year it was applied would increase under a wet season. And this is because of the increased dissolution reactions and also the easier access to fertiliser by the crop plant. But we also thought that phosphorus fertiliser might be relatively more important in a dry season because it is closer to the developing seedling. In terms of topsoil phosphorus supply, we expected better access to topsoil phosphorus in a wet season due to increased root growth and those increased P cycling reactions of diffusion, mobilisation and mineralisation. When we came to the subsoil, we weren't really sure, and we developed two scenarios. The first scenario, which we thought was relatively safe, was that in a dry season, the crop roots would push further into the subsoil to seek out water, and in doing so may use more of the phosphorus resources at depth. And our expectation was that in a wet season, the roots are more actively growing, so it's possible that they were using phosphorus at depth just because they had the energy to do so. So the aims of this work were to measure fertiliser P that had been consumed by a crop plant in dry versus wet seasons in the year applied, and to measure that relative importance of the topsoil, which we define as 0 to 15 centimetres, and the subsoil as a source of phosphorus. To do this, we set up some experiments that were plus and minus phosphorus. We used phosphoric acid because we radio-labelled our fertiliser, so it's easier to do so with a liquid, but we don't expect any difference in performance in these particular sites, which were all neutral to alkaline pH but not calcareous. We applied nitrogen and zinc to all our treatments. We had 7 sites where we measured phosphorus fertiliser efficiency, and at 3 of those sites we measured the topsoil versus subsoil supply of phosphorus, which was a more detailed methodology. To water our plants, we started out with optimal soil moisture because it improved our ability to label the soil in our topsoil-subsoil experiment, and then we had our rainout shelters and we watered them to decile 2 and decile 7. And we had to make some adjustments to our watering regime because, as you saw, it was quite a wet season. And particularly in our soils where we had sand over clay, we had some lateral flow. So we were monitoring soil water throughout the season as well. Our plants were harvested at 3 months. We used a short season cultivar called Axe, and 3 months was sort of the limitation of our radio label. And that took us to head in the boot. So we were hoping to capture most of the phosphorus uptake. So I've just put some pictures here to show just some features of the experiment. We had to set up in cores because we were using a radio A label, and that was a requirement by the EPA. But I just wanted to show you that the roots could grow beyond the core. They just had a very coarse mesh on the bottom, so they were able to actively explore the soil. This is just the setup of the rain-out shelter, and it has a barrier in the middle so that we can water to a decile 2 and a decile 7. So this is the drier treatment here and the wetter treatment there. And this is just one site. I don't think it's that easy to see, but this is a plus P and minus P here. So in order to set up our labelling regime, the fertiliser efficiency measurement was relatively straightforward. It was simply a tracer where our fertiliser was labelled with 32p. But in order to measure the supply from topsoil versus subsoil, we had to set up this difference method, which is a modification of a method developed by Sherlaw and Alston. So what we had was a comparison between a confined and unconfined core. So a confined core had a very fine mesh to not allow any root growth beyond the core, including mycorrhizae, but it did allow water to permeate through that core, and an unconfined core had free root growth. And then we fully labelled the soil in both cores, and using our difference method in our equation up the top, we were able to determine the P from the subsoil and then by difference the P from the topsoil. The assumption of this experiment is that the roots in the confined core are not mobilising non-labile sources of phosphorus. So that's just something to keep in mind. So we had seven sites for this experiment, which were all based in the drought-prone regions of southern Australia, which on an average season have 300 to 400 millimetres of rainfall. They all have neutral to alkaline pH. That wasn't a deliberate choice, that's just a feature of that landscape. And so they are the blue dots in the bottom part of South Australia. I just wanted to quickly point out some of the features of our sites. We selected sites that range from deficient to sufficient phosphorus, and I've just used a stoplight system to indicate which sites were deficient through to sufficient. The soil test that we've used here is the DGT soil test, which is a soil test commonly used in research in Australia, which is not yet commercial. But it's shown to be considerably more effective than our bicarbonate extractions. And I also just wanted to highlight that to measure the profile labile phosphorus, we also assessed resin P, and we had very low resin P in our subsoils. And I just wanted to point out, especially the minipa soil had very low labile P, which is important as I show the results. So this is our measurement of fertiliser efficiency, and you can see that there's a considerable variation in fertiliser efficiency. And for five of our seven sites, we had considerably higher fertiliser efficiency or recovery of the fertiliser that we applied last year when it was a wet season compared to a dry season. And as I mentioned before, we had some issues with our sand over clay sites with water flowing laterally, and that's the sites where we didn't see a difference in fertiliser efficiency between the wet and dry season. The level of fertiliser recovery ranged from 3 to 30%, but it wasn't necessarily directly related to the soil P status. So Langhorne Creek on the far left was a P-deficient soil and did have one of the highest fertiliser recoveries, but then our Karoonda soil was completely sufficient and it had the next highest level of recovery. This is our topsoil-subsoil experiment, and this is the Karoonda site, which is not deficient in phosphorus, and this is a deep sand. And what we saw here, which was of interest to us, was that in the wet season on the far right, when we added fertiliser, we had significantly more removal of phosphorus from the subsoil. So the top green is the fertiliser removal, yellow is the topsoil, and black is the subsoil. So subsoil removal was increased when the soil was wet and especially when it was fertilised So we expect that the roots were stimulated through that addition of fertiliser in a wet season to grow and explore the subsoil. At the Minipa soil, we didn't see that same relationship, but if you remember, we didn't actually have a phosphorus reserve at depth in the Minipa soil. So we see more use of phosphorus in our wet versus dry conditions, but we don't see a more active use of the subsoil phosphorus reserve. And there's always a site that disproves your theory. And so at Hallerdon, which had a very similar phosphorus reserve to Corunda, we do see the difference between the wet and dry in terms of total phosphorus extraction, but it didn't explore that subsoil. You also see that this site was particularly inefficient at extracting phosphorus. It's also the site of a phosphorus use efficiency trial, and our collaborators and we also think that there's some external nutritional issue here that we haven't resolved. Our key findings for phosphorus management in response to these trials are that fertiliser efficiency or recovery in the year applied can be anywhere between 3 and 30% of that fertiliser applied, which is between 0.5 and 4.5 kilos of P per hectare in the Australian system. And most growers are using fertiliser rates that would very much replace this. And we see this in our soil testing. Our phosphorus reserves are continuing to increase. 70 to 97% of our crop phosphorus uptake was derived from the top, from soil phosphorus. So it suggests to us that we really need to place a really high value on understanding soils phosphorus supply and ensuring that we monitor and maintain soil fertility. So our fertiliser P is very important for starter phosphorus supply and encouraging roots to grow actively, but we also need to be thinking about monitoring fertility throughout the profile. Subsoil phosphorus was better utilised when the topsoil was fertilised at Corunda, especially in the wet season. So I think this is really an opportunity to consider the fertilised volume, and I have seen some other talks this week suggesting the same thing. So thinking about nutrient supply throughout the profile and how you might manage that. In our system, we're managing from low fertility up. In Northern Australia, they're certainly running down high fertility systems, and they're also monitoring their subsoil phosphorus supplies. I'd also like to acknowledge discussions with Eric Smulders and Yubing Ma for our calculations of isotopes. And for seven sites, we had a number of landholders and collaborators and technical staff. Thank you. It was difficult for us to... So we were essentially just trying to dry down the profile from the point where we started. So we used those rainout shelters, and at most of our sites that worked. So as the season progressed, the profile was drying. But at the Sandover clay sites, I think we had some lateral flow because we were monitoring our... we were monitoring soil water throughout the season and it just wasn't going down. So... I don't think we've... So all of our water is applied as irrigation, essentially as rainfall. So, it's very specific to trying to set up that season. So we had good soil moisture as a even playing field at the start, and we were drying down. So it would be different for us in a normal drought where we would be dry throughout the profile, I think.